Thank you very much. Thank you very much. Thank you very much. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you very much. Thank you very much. Thank you. Thank you. Yes. Praise be to Allah. Praise be to Allah, the one Lord and Creator of us all. Peace and blessings be upon His Prophet and Messenger Muhammad and all the righteous servants. Ameen. We greet you in our religious language of peace, that is, peace be unto you, as we say, Assalamu alaikum. Let me first express my appreciation of being given the honor of addressing you here at Manhattan Community College on this special day for the African American and the Black people, Day of Black Solidarity. And I'd like to express special appreciation to the president and also to the dean of the college, Dean Blake, the president of the student body, and all of you who have been instrumental in bringing this meeting about. I will not keep myself in the heat too long. I hope you'll bear patiently with me. I think I have an obligation to tell you who don't know about us, that is American Muslim Mission, to tell you what we are doing, to tell you what we are about, to tell you what we are doing to progress the life that all of us are concerned about. And that life is the progressive life of the African American people. I'm sure all of us have that concern at heart. Since I've been the imam of the American Muslim Mission, I have been pictured or cast into a role that I think is not completely true of me. And many people are turned off when they hear my name. They say, oh, that fella, the one who deserted the black nation of Islam. Well, I'm not here to defend myself, but I'm here to just do what I think is proper to do on this occasion, and that is to let you know exactly what we're doing. There are many concerns that I would like to address tonight that I think would be appropriate on this night, but I will make the time as short as possible and go right to the theme that you have chosen for this day, and that is economics. As a product of the Nation of Islam, I have never left the business or material concerns of the people. But I've considered myself to be a leader that the people chose and answerable to the people. And they didn't choose me to lie to them. They didn't choose me to put on a show. They knew me before they selected me. They chose me to be straight and honest and straightforward with them, and that's what I've tried to do for these 7 or 8 years now. I've tried to be honest, and I'm going to be honest until I die, if God bless me. And I did what I felt was necessary at the time, and that was to call the people. Attention away from getting the dollar and to call it back to getting their life in order. We need the dollar, but we know many people who get dollars in their hands and they are not improving their state, they're not improving their condition, though they're getting dollars into their hands. And why? Because they don't have the right grip on life. So I felt the need to call the Nation of Islam, as we were called in those days, 7 years ago or so, to call it back to that concern for life, keeping life in the proper order, in the proper state. And I don't want to mention the deterioration that had manifest in the Nation of Islam's leadership and in the spirit of our community. I don't care to waste that time tonight. But I'm sure many of you know about that deterioration. I won't mention that at all, but I'm merely saying, and you'll have to trust me, believe what I'm saying, that it was a necessity to turn the community away from the dollar and turn it back to getting life together. And God blessed us to do that. We have leaders now who represent the whole concern of man, and that's what we work for, to get people who will not just talk money, but will talk money, will talk morals, will not be afraid to address any of the essential needs in human life. And one thing about our religion, and I'm a product of my religion, one thing about our religion, it requires of every Muslim that he sees life in its full focus, not just look at it as material life, or look at it as moral life, or look at it as spiritual life, or look at it as political life. He must see life in its whole focus. And sometimes you find that your right foot has been injured, and you have to hop on your left foot until it gets well. Or either walk with a cane or something. So I think we've done what was practical and right to do. Now let me tell you what we are doing now, since we have got our life back together. And you know, I'm not saying all of us are angels. That's not getting your life together. That's sending your life away. We don't want to all be angels. We want to stay human beings, you know, but we want to be as best we can. We want to keep some dignity, some self-respect, and we want our community to be represented as a moral-minded community and not a criminal community or an immoral community. We have to keep the right image of our community. When I visited China, and I don't mention this to tell you that I went to China, I'd rather tell you what Prophet Muhammad said. He said, go to even to China in search of knowledge. I went to China with U.S. people, American People Friendship organization. And when I got there, the Chinese host, who spoke English very well, first thing he said was, how's the situation? And he didn't explain what he meant, and nobody replied except with comments that didn't answer his question. And me, I was observing like I was doing in the Nation of Islam. I'm quiet when I'm the guest, you see. I observe, I'd rather observe. Anyway, I thought about that. I didn't forget what he said. And I got back to America, and I said, my oh my, that's what it is, a situation. A situation. And right now, we are
trying to work with the situation. There are many leaders, and I was so happy to see so many distinguished leaders up on this, what you call it, platform, podium, diocese. I don't know, they got so many names for it. Depending on the class of people sitting on it, what is it? All right, anyway, we have some very good people who are working to keep us moving forward. And that's what the freedom movement has been about, keeping us going forward. We don't want to go backwards. And I think that's why so many of us are in a low spirit now. It's because of what we're hearing that's coming out of Washington, D.C. Now, for me, it's a challenge. Not that I like what's coming out of Washington, D.C. I don't like it. In fact, I never went to see many Reagan movies. I didn't. I don't know why, but I just didn't go to see his movie. I believe he's a good president, but I still don't want to see his movie. We'll go right to the point. The situation is this. Most of the American people don't have their life in their own hands. American environment, cultural environment, whatever kind of environment you might call it, but actually cultural influences are put in the society and taken out whenever is necessary. And right now, I don't see much of a cultural presence in our environment. The environment is loaded with a lot of signals and a lot of charges that most of us can't read and most of us can't deal with, you know? So we find that this is a situation. And it's not only a situation for blacks. This is a situation for the average American. American life put people in a situation. Now, you know, a situation can be good and it can be bad. This is called a land of opportunity. So I think if you get your head together, if you get your head on right, I think the American situation is good. But for people who can't get their head on right, it's terrible. Because the American situation challenges intelligence in the human being more than any other situation I know on earth. You don't have to be as intelligent to live in America as you have to be to live in Egypt, or to live in China, or to live in any other country, even to live in France. You don't have to be as intelligent. In America, you have to be awful intelligent, because this is the most divided country on earth. Those other countries have a better sense of unity, a better sense of cohesiveness, a better sense of national unity and national cohesiveness. The American people, they have lost that. Pioneers had it, but we have lost that. And we have not lost it because we wanted to give it up. We have lost it because influences have been aimed at us to make us give it up. This is a challenging environment, very challenging environment. And I would like to go on to talk more about the American environment, because I believe the more we know about the nature of a situation, the more successful we'll be in dealing with it. And believe me, there's a lot to be said about the nature of this situation. Now, you know, situation can work in your favor, it can work against you. You can use a situation. And sometimes a situation gets like a bad shoelace. It's better to throw it away. So some situations you have to change. Some you have to make work for you. Now, the leader whom I have great respect for, he's in Chicago. Came from the South. Used to be a student of Dr. Martin Luther King. May God grant him the paradise. And this particular gentleman I'm talking about is more popular than I am. much more popular than I am. The country preacher, as he used to be called, Reverend Jesse Jackson. Now, his strategy now, I don't know if it always has been his strategy, but his strategy now is to make the situation work for those who are being exploited. So he accepts that there's a situation. He has recognized it. He knows, the man can see, he has insight. He knows the situation. And his way of dealing with it is to make it pay off for those who are in the situation. He is advocating now economic reciprocity. That if you're receiving benefits from black people, economic benefits, then give them back something. Give them something in return. Now, you may say, well, Brother Imam, do you support that? Yes, I do. Certainly I do. Because that's right. That's justice. If the consumers are enriching the business people, these manufacturers, etc., pop factories and whatever, if we are enriching them, then certainly that's a situation. And the situation should benefit both the businessman and the consumer. But it's a pity. And I have to say this again, it's a pity that we let the adverse kind of disturbing spirits that come into the atmosphere take our mind off our direction. Now, our direction is not to let our race be a race of consumers. Our direction is to become self-supporting as much as possible. Now, we know we can't become completely self-supporting. The truth of the matter is that America itself is not totally self-supporting. America has been strong because of her foreign markets. And it's weak today because of the drying up of those foreign markets. It's weak today because of the shifting of labor, the shifting of industry from America to cheap labor areas, cheap labor land, Brazil, and many other places where labor is cheaper. So, dear people, I agree that if you got a situation, you have to make the situation pay off for you. But some situations, as I said earlier, some situations can't be tolerated. They have to be changed. Now, the Honorable Elijah Muhammad was a leader who had a terrific psychology for getting black people to go forward. Now, I hope that I'm not compromising my own position here today by saying these true things about the Honorable Elijah Muhammad. It's very true. The Honorable Elijah Muhammad had a powerful psychology. You may say, well, why? What do you mean by psychology? Well, you can say philosophy, ideology. I call it psychology. Because anytime you have to manipulate people to get them to do what's best for them, that's psychology. And the Honorable Elijah Muhammad was a genius at manipulating his community to get his community to go forward. And I think he got it from his teacher. Many of you don't know, but what we was promised, you know, everybody needs to have a reward dingled in their face if you ask them to do something. They use the same trick on animals, don't they? You want an animal to do something, give him a reward behind his work. That's an animal. But if you want a human being to do something, you give him the reward before his work. That is, you have to make him feel he's got the reward before he works. Say, hey, man, I got a job I want you to do. Say, I'm going to pay you $50 today if you do it. It's only going to take you about 5 hours. Okay, he starts to work because he feels he got $50. You see? Okay, so the Honorable Elijah Muhammad was giving us psychology from his teacher, who was called W.D. Farad. Farad Muhammad, he's called many names. I don't know why a man would want so many names. Now, he was giving a strategy. He said, tell them that if they obey you, follow you, that they will get plenty money, good home, and friendship in all walks of life. Now, that's a powerful promise. And it kept the Nation of Islam going for better than 40 years. Until they start getting some of that money. And start getting a few good homes. Then corruption set in. So I'm not condemning it. What I'm saying that if you bait a fish, then you should take him into a better life. And any human being who eats the fish gives that fish to a higher form of life. Now, if a dog could fish, that would be terrible. But human beings fish, you know. The fish would say, oh, if a dog could fish, the fish would say, what kind of scheme is this that God got that gives me to a dog? But a human being eating them up, you know, if the fish could really know what's happening, he'd say, oh, this is a great scheme. It's giving me to a higher form of life. So any plan you got, it should lead people, supporters, into more and more life. Into better and better life. Now, when it starts to have what they call counter effect, where you're getting bad results than good, rather than good, then it's time for you to examine that and see what's wrong, and maybe you need to detour. Maybe you need to take another road. Some roads don't take you all the way; they just take you part of the way. Well, I see the Nation of Islam as taking us part of the way. Now, I don't justify the strategy. I'm not a fisherman. I don't believe in fishing. I believe in telling a man who's a fish, you're not a fish. And I'm not going to disrespect you with a bait on a hook. That's what I'd rather do. But that's okay. Forget about that. This is Black Solidarity Day. Now, when the Nation of Islam got in the shape that it was in, I came out of prison in January 1963. I was given a 3-year sentence for not going to the army, for not answering Selective Service Office to report for work at Elgin State Hospital. I had one conscientious objector status. And they didn't require that I go to war, but they asked me to go to the hospital and do work there. So I talked to the Honorable Elijah Muhammad. Excuse me for digressing here a little bit. I talked to the Honorable Elijah Muhammad, and he said, that'll be the same as going to war. He was my leader, so I went to jail. And while I was in jail, I said, boy, oh boy, my leader sure dominates me. But that's okay. Excuse me for getting off the subject. So anyway, they told me upon my release, now here come the captain, Supreme Captain. They came to pick me up. A couple of my relatives, Supreme Captain and his assistant, Supreme Captain Elijah Muhammad Jr. And they told me, say, look, we're glad you're out. We're glad you're out. The Nation of Islam's in bad shape. Say, we're about to go broke. That's what they told me in 63. January of 63. That's the disheartening message or news that they gave me in 1963. Well, you know, the Nation of Islam had expanded itself so materially that was frightening to hear that. Because if the Nation of Islam broke, then how are we going to keep those assets? How are we going to keep the assets? We have to have money to keep those assets. So it was very frightening. So after I got to my father and talked to him, I was relaxed. He relaxed me. Because that man was a courageous man. He didn't tell me the Nation of Islam was broke. He told me, son, we got to get the money. We got to get the money. That's what he told me. Now, that's leadership. Those people that told me the nation was broke, that wasn't leadership. Son of the leader coming out of jail and you drop something like that on him, you must want him to go to church or something? You don't tell him the Nation of Islam is broke because Nation of Islam promised us plenty of money. You don't tell him it's broke, that means its hope is gone. All right? So anyway, after all, Elijah Muhammad rested my feelings. I decided that I would concentrate on improving the spiritual and mental state of the community because I saw that there was a problem there. And the Honorable Elijah Muhammad didn't allow me to get on the rostrum or on the platform and just go right out of jail into that. And I think it was good for me. He was a wise man. Kept it out of me, kept me away from the rostrum, I think. I think he did it for my own good. So that I'll have plenty of time to think the situation over, and perhaps get better insight into the workings and nature of the Nation of Islam, you see. And that's what it did. It gave me that opportunity to get better insight. And that's what we need. We need insight. I forget the distinguished American who said, I think it was Frank Lloyd Wright. I'm almost positive that it was him who said this. He said, it's not looking at life, but looking into it. And many of us can look at life, but how many of us can look into life? So we need insight. We need insight into the situation we're in, into the economic situation we're in. We need insight. We need to analyze situations. We need to analyze even our decisions, analyze our judgments. Because they're not always right. And then we can make progress. In other words, we have to become less visceral, less given to emotional surges, and more attuned to reason. To reason. To common sense. We have to seek scientific insight into matters. How come we have to do that? Because we live in a highly competitive society. And the white man has scientific leadership. White man has scientific leadership. And we go to his schools and we learn about science, human behavior, political, the nature of politics, the nature of morality, and the nature of this and the nature of that. But instead of using that science to advance the people who are culturally deprived, our own constituents, instead of using it to advance them, we go and ask the white man to hire. And he hire us to promote his thing. Now, I'm not saying we shouldn't take these positions in the white man's system. We should, because this is American system. It's ours, too. We have a share in it. We have to promote that. We have to encourage our people to seek leadership positions in industry, in the government, in everything that is of essential benefit to society. We have encouraged that. But at the same time, we have to say, look, we can't afford for all you all to go there, man. This community still needs leadership, and it needs better leadership. We have to call some of that excellent talent to come here and get into the freedom struggle. That's what's needed, and believe me, we're going to do it single-handedly or with you. I'm talking about the Muslims. We're going to do it single-handedly, or we're going to do it with you. In other words, we're not discouraged because other people don't help us. We have a training that's 50 years old. In the 1930s, nobody helped us. In the 1940s, nobody helped us. In the 1950s, nobody helped us. In the 1960s, nobody helped us. When the Honorable Elijah Muhammad died, then the establishment paid tribute to him. And then black folks start acting like they wanted to help him. The man was gone too late. All right. I told you in the beginning I won't hold you long. I'm going to wind it up. I'm going to conclude it, not wind it up. I don't like that terminology. I think they've wind us up enough. I'm not trying to take Dick Gregory's face. But I have borrowed from his science, too. It's good to put a little humor in it sometimes. You can take it better. This is a sad situation. Now, let me see, can I hurry and bring this to a conclusion? Insight means understanding the nature of society, the nature of life, how progress is made, what natural causes are working to favor progress, what natural causes are working to hurt progress. History is very important when you want to see your situation and understand the movement of life. Some people don't move with life. You know, science is what? Science is based on what? Nature. Science is the knowledge of nature, isn't it? Science doesn't tell us to study unnatural things. Science tells us only to study natural things. So science is a development out of nature. It's the pure expression of the wisdom that's locked up in nature. Now, another thing we should understand is that religion is a symbolic way of saying just that. That's the message of religion. In its symbol, it says just that. That God's will is that nature reveal herself. And that man discover the progressive movement in nature. Nature is progressive. Say, well, what does it have to do with solidarity, black solidarity today? Well, I hope you can catch on without me telling you. Okay, so we think of nature, and I would like to say many things about this. I'm going to go right to something, I think an illustration that will give us the message right away. When you look at life being born, the baby, you see that baby being born, and before we can communicate to that baby is growing. That baby doesn't grow because we communicate to it. Before we can communicate to that baby is growing. That baby is already trying to take the destined position that was intended for it by nature. It's trying to pull its head up first, start moving its little hand and little feet. It's trying to get its muscles developed because it knows it's going to need muscles developed in order to hold its destined position. And that is the erect position like this. We manage it now without even thinking about it. But that baby had to struggle like, excuse the expression, hell, to be able to manage this ease that we don't even give a thought to. All right, so that baby is progressing, isn't he? He's progressing. Nature has done that. Nature has done that. Now, that baby has already intelligence. A baby is not near as silly-minded as a lot of grown-ups. Hold up, I want you to understand this. This is very important for black solidarity today. When the baby come here, he's not silly. No baby come here making jokes and laughing at everything you say. You have to work to get him to laugh. Little baby, and you work on him for months. He come here very serious. And you be carrying on the fool and he looking at you. You know, you ever notice a baby? He'll look at you. I'm talking about an infant in the crib. You be trying to, and the baby will look at you for a while and then take his eyes off you like you say, let me, I may be seeing things. Say, this might not be real. Let me look away and look again. Look away from you and then look again. And you have to work on that baby, I repeat, for months to get that baby to start being playful. Baby is not born playful. Baby is born serious. All right, but we make the baby playful, don't we? Now, that's nature's design. Nature intended that comes about because that joy, that burst of joy, that energy in us, that energy for having fun is needed to develop the muscles until the brain gets matured. Because the brain is going to put some heavy responsibilities on the muscles. So nature has designed that the baby gets into play. Not only the baby, this is true for the animal world. The young animal is playful, but not at first. As an infant, he's serious. Then he gets playful. And then after a while, he gets serious again. Now, anytime life continues to be playful all the time, it's caught into an idiot groove. Now, what is the point? The point is that if we want to have some economic dignity, we're going to have to become serious people. Get a lot of this foolishness and play out of ourselves. Now, you know, if Farrakhan was here, he could excite you. I don't have that charisma. No, I don't think I do. Believe me, that man is an orator. He charms me. Yes, he's really a speaker. Where'd I get that word from, charm? Oh, I know. He was called the charmer when he used to play the guitar. That's, he was a calypso. He's calypso. That's right. I knew it was something that made me say that. All right, so look, I think we're going to have to not only make situations work for us so that we have this reciprocity, but we're going to also have to change situations in the degree that they must be changed. And the Honorable Elijah Muhammad, though I differ with him on his theology, and most of you don't know it, I can't prove it, I have just a few witnesses, and they are Uncle Tom's for the corrupt people in the system. They won't support me when I need them. But they heard the Honorable Elijah Muhammad say, sitting at the table, he said, "I wish I was a man, my son is." And when he said that, I said to myself, "I wish I was a man you are." Because you don't know, and just saying what you have said make you a bigger man than me. Because how many men can say to their son, "I wish I was a man, my son is"? And in the presence of witnesses, in the presence of his staff, a young man told me he was working for the media, newspaper, a Babylonian black man, working for a newspaper, very brilliant youngster. He said, "Look," he said, "I'm happy to know that you have not given up on the positive things that your father was doing." He said, "Look," he said, "one thing that we always valued and admired about you all," he said, "most of our movement, they don't plan for the future." He said, "most of our movements don't groom leadership to succeed the leader." He said, "but your father, he prepared Malcolm." Saying, "your father must have prepared you." Saying, "we find that there are many leaders in the Nation of Islam who are capable of carrying the movement forward." And that really is a tribute. That's a credit to the Honorable Elijah Muhammad's leadership. Well, I know many business efforts that were made, Fuller's products, and they didn't groom people to carry their work on. Many of them, many business efforts. We have many good freedom movement efforts, many good organizations, but they didn't groom good leadership to carry the movement on. I don't say it was intentional. I think this is a habit. This is another situation for us. So when we look at life, dear people, we find that life gets started because, number one, nature has put into us, as new life, new people coming up, it has put into us a caring concern for others. So we find that nature starts off giving the individual a caring concern for other individuals. And the individual will sacrifice itself for that concern. This is not only in human beings, also in the animal kingdom. The animal will sacrifice itself for the new animal, for the coming animal. And the human being has that same nature. Mother will sacrifice her life for her baby. Father will sacrifice his life, not as quick, but for his baby. You see? So we have this. It's nature. It's nature. I don't know. Father must think he's going to live always or something. I don't know what's wrong with Father. I think this is just this goddamn situation we're in, making the father like this. I don't think that's his nature. You Belalian fathers, you black fathers, you got to accept responsibility to keep your generation going and stop wasting so much of your monies and energy on now and start investing some in the future. Excuse me for getting excited a little bit. I try to keep my feet up on the ground. I like to be on the ground. We find that particular progression of life goes on for so long. Then something else takes place. Something happens. Society progressed so far upon that particular incentive or whatever it is, motivation. Then something happens. The sentiments, the sensitivities, the concerns change. And the people begin to be selfish. And the selfish concern then starts the rat race. And it goes so far, and the people get fed and sick of that, and then they're reborn. Another genuine concern comes into them. And how does it work? We find that then the individual transfers of some kind of way, his concern is transferred, his subconsciousness or his sensitivity, pardon me, are transferred to the collective body, and he began to live for the collective body like that mother, parent lived for the family. And that's a new day. That's a new day. It's so beautiful again. So beautiful again. Okay, so we have to understand this nature, this particular nature of society. And what we have to do now is realize that slavery disseminated, set the social life against itself. It made our own social sensitivity kind of split, separate. And this one goes to this concern. That one goes to that concern. And then they become enemies of each other. To make something dissimilar means to make it strange, to alienate it, to make it regard the thing that it was once with as an enemy. And that's what has happened to us. We are so busy watching what each other is doing. We're so busy in competition with each other to see that we surmount each other. And we are not surmounting the challenging forces of this devilish society. So when you get in a situation like that, when you're so afraid of each other succeeding you, afraid of being succeeded by another member of your own class, buddy, you're finished. And that's what slavery did to us. Slavery fed us with that kind of sensitivity, where we are afraid that, will he succeed? If he succeeds, he will get the credit. He will get attention. He will be honored. He will be celebrated. Well, God damn it, let us get rid of the white man's thing that he inbred in us. He inbred that in us. I'm not talking about every white man. I'm talking about the devil racist, the devil slave master. He bred that in the slave so that the slave would not be a problem for him. He didn't want no unity, because if united people rebel, that's a hell of a rebellion. And he didn't want that. So he bred these sensitivities in us to make us alienate us from our own united life. Now, dear people, we have to understand that and look back at slavery and understand what slavery has done. We have to study the psychological hangover from slavery. We are suffering psychological problems that come from slavery. Now let me pause for just a minute. I hope you'll give me another few minutes. Any psychologist that is qualified to be called doctor, he will tell you that if any individual is made to suffer the extreme dehumanizing conditions that our people suffered during the centuries of slavery, that he would predict, and any doctor would predict, that that individual would come out of that experience insane. All right? You understand how they work so hard to see that the environment is conducive to sensible, balanced life? And right away, if you got problems, what will the psychologist ask you? He'll ask you questions of your past. And he wants to know what kind of influences have been working in your life to throw you off balance. And he said, oh, had a domineering parent. Had a parent that was too strict. Well, look, nobody was stricter than the slave master. Out of whack, then I'm going to question my behavior and be my own doctor. Why, once you know the factors that have been working to make the disease, then you become the doctor. And don't let nobody tell you I'm not a doctor. This world didn't give me any degree, but I'm a doctor. Yes, I'm a doctor. And believe me, all of you who will take time to think about what the experience we call slavery and the 100 years after that of lynchings and Jim Crowism, etc., if we think about what that has done to our life, and if we think about it sensibly and realize that our behavior may be in some ways motivated, in some ways influenced, pardon me, by those circumstances, then we become doctors for ourselves. Then you'll say, oh, I'm not going to spit in my husband's face and go insane because he's telling me to watch the budget. Why, that's a slave inbred impulse. I'm not going to do that anymore. And the husband will say, hell, I'm not going to leave my wife and walk away. Leave my wife here just because we are not making it too well now. I'm not going to leave her just because she's not as appealing as she was when she was 16. I'm not going to leave her. That's a slave inbred impulse. Yes, you've inherited that from slavery. Slavery was a system that separated the family members. And you got used to that. Slavery was practiced for more than a century, two or three centuries. And we got used to being separated from our family members. And right now, the white man, he says, what's wrong? How come blacks? How come they have so many single family homes? The bastard knows why. I'm talking about the real bastard who's still trying to work that same kind of plan to alienate us, to alienate our social life. He knows what happened. He knows what happened. He knows that slavery inbred that into us. Now, dear people, I say we must become our own doctors. And until you get yourself back together as a social unit, you won't have any economic dignity. Nature has designed that man come up as an individual from a family society, from a family situation, and that he grows up and marry and have children. And if he grows up and marry and have children, he takes on added responsibility. That added responsibility, nature tells him, man, now you got added responsibility. You're going to have to make better use of your material circumstances. Nature has made the economist. Nature has made the businessman. Nature has made the banker. Nature has made everything excellent that we have. God has set the plan. All right. So, dear people, that's what we had to do. We had to get our life together. We had more direction on the church than we have now. But the church failed us. The Honorable Elijah Muhammad said the church failed us. I remember him saying in Washington, he said, the church has failed you. He said, a white man has failed you. Church has failed you. He said, you should take it all and put it in a trash can and then take the trash can and beat the white man's head with it. Now, he didn't mean actually take a trash can and start hitting white people on the head. He meant take the evidence in the trash can and use it to shame the white man out of his behavior. All right. Now, dear people, what we have to do is understand that this society is highly competitive. This society is an experimental democracy. What is meant by that is this. It licenses everything that will result in progress. If sin will promote progress, it licenses sin. Crime promotes progress, it licenses crime. Mister, are you saying that you don't want to live in America? Well, look, I think this is the most fortunate place for me. It challenges me more than any other place. And the human potential, again, nature works like this, that if human potential is not challenged, it either dies or it wakes up and creates a challenge. Because challenge advances life. So I'm not disturbed. I'm not dissatisfied with the situation we're in. I'm dissatisfied with our response to it. I think it's a very good situation for moving us forward and making us progress and making us fight, get in the competition. But on Black Solidarity Day, I want to bring your attention to something. The white man creates the term race for the ignorant masses. I'm talking about the manipulator. Those white brains that orchestrate and manipulate in order to keep things under control. Those particular people, they invented racism. Don't you know, before 50 years or so ago, nobody was referred to in the broad world as white. They worked on promoting that idea until they got people to call themselves white. Irish people didn't call themselves white people. Italians didn't call themselves white people. Study the history of race. What is this fellow named? Boaz, I think his name. Boaz is his last name, I'm positive of that. He wrote a book many years ago on race. His book tells us how these racial terms and color classifications came into existence. It was done to satisfy the designs of European domination on this earth. So they fed the world with these color messages. One people are white, the other people are black. There is no such thing as no black people and white people. People are people. And if you want to identify them, you have to identify them in their historical experience and not in the color of their skin. And again, the Honorable Elijah Muhammad's leadership was very, very, very advanced, because it at least told us that the colored man is the devil. Now, we had been thinking that we were the colored man. So the Nation of Islam told us, say, no, you're not colored. Say, the one who's colored is the one who's making you, telling you you're colored. You know, to color something in English grammar means to falsify it, means to take it out of its true context, means to exaggerate or hide or camouflage. See, to color something means to make it unreal, you know. So racist terms and color consciousness is something that colors our mind. It makes our minds unreal. And when your mind becomes unreal, your behavior becomes unreal. Now think about Fashti. You remember that woman, black woman, that played in these movies, Fashti? That character in the movies, Fashti. I don't know if you all remember that, Fashti. A lot of the people here, they remember Fashti. Maybe I can bring her back to your mind. Fashti just couldn't stop talking. Once she's, no, Fashti. Sapphire, too. But her name was first Fastire. Then they started calling her Sapphire. That's more reason. See, I'm a little older than you fellas. Yes, Fastire was a black character that Hollywood created. I don't know, Hollywood. I think the same oppressor created through Hollywood. Hollywood was the instrument. So they created this figure called Fastire. And when she starts talking, she can't stop. And she's easily irritated. It's hard for her to concentrate on more than one thing. If she's washing the dishes and the mistress says, "Did you turn the fire from under the pot?" she goes berserk. She just goes to pieces. She drops the dishes. "Missus, I can't watch the fire on the pot and wash dishes too." See, that's Fastire. And if she can get your attention, she starts talking and never stops. She just prattles on and on and on. Why? Because the poor girl's expressions have been bottled up. The oppressive society or oppressive environment that she lived in denied her the freedom of expression. So she was just all bottled up. And anytime she got an opportunity to talk to somebody, why, she just didn't want to let them go. So she felt if she would stop talking for a half second, she might lose their attention. So she just prattled on and on and on. Also, there's a character who exaggerates their refinement. This is another character they made of us, Hollywood made of us, right? Who exaggerates their refinement, puts on, pretend to be in the know, pretend to have it all together. I'm talking about slave-bred influences, all right? Okay. So this kind of character is called, what do you call it? I think one of the names for it is pritzy. Yeah, pritzy. A pritzy person. Fastidious again. Right? That's Fastire. Fastire was fastidious. And she had, her disease was manifest in a different way, slave-bred disease. And other ones, they had manifested. Then you got to Uncle Tom, right? And Uncle Tom, he was infected too by slavery to get out of his natural human form. The typical Uncle Tom, he tries to carry favors from the master by pretending to be completely harmless. He pretends that he loves America more than the white man. He pretends that he loves the American situation more than the white man, more than the system. He takes in white children just like he does black. He puts them on his knees. You know the old picture of Uncle Tom. Who was that woman, Mary Lou Booth, who wrote, I think, was she one who wrote that? I think it was. I'm not sure. I believe it was her. Anyway, she wrote the story of Uncle Tom to influence the white nervous people who were nervous about freeing us to get them to see that, look, this Negro is harmless. Don't be afraid to free him. He will never leave America. He will never leave you. He loves America more than you do. He loves this life, and he loves the white people just like we love our own children. Uncle Tom is beautiful. So she depicted the whole race as Uncle Tom, right? And made Uncle Tom the one who tries to convince white people that, look, your slave ain't gonna rebel. Your slave is harmless, innocent. And we still have that tendency. I got some of these niggas in my administration. They're so busy trying to convince the CIA and the FBI and other law enforcement agencies that, look, we are completely harmless. Why, we are as harmless as you are. Will you harm yourself, white man? Well, if you won't harm yourself, see us? We're just like you. We share all of your sentiments. We have none of our own. That's a damn lie. Don't put me in that bunch. I have some sentiments of my own. All right, excuse my language. All right? And one thing I can always count on is an audience. Because the intelligent people, they never leave me. See, if it wasn't for you being so intelligent, you would have been throwing tomatoes at me if you had any, or got up out of your seats and walked out on me and left me here talking to an empty room. But I never have to worry about that, because intelligent people, they love me either as their boy, as their baby, or their child, or they love me as their daddy. And I don't care how they love me, as long as they love me. All right. So, dear people, we want some economic dignity, and we are never going to give it up. But we have to understand that some situations must be changed. We have Reverend Jackson, who's advocating reciprocity, who's advocating the making this situation work for us, but we're going to have to keep this progression that was started in Marcus Garvey and others maybe who went before him. It was picked up by the Honorable Elijah Muhammad from Farouk Muhammad, and still being advocated by many black leaders, that we have to work for economic dignity. So we can't give that up. And economic dignity means changing the character of our race from that of a consumer to that of producers. Peace be unto you. As-salamu alaykum.
Takbir! 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 All praises to Allah. Takbir! All right, beautiful. Beautiful. All praises due to Allah. Brothers and sisters, the program is not over. We do have one last performance by the Masterson's Gospel Group. But we want to really, on the behalf of the Activities Office, the President of the College, we would like to really thank Imam Wallace E. Muhammad for coming to Manhattan Community College. So we're going to spend a few minutes just rearranging the stage for the group. Thank you. Yep.